Side A, Senate Committee on Elections, April 14th, 1981, hearing room C, hearing on SB 420, SB 518, SB 723, SB 746, and SB 753.
We'll begin with a hearing on Senate Bill 746 and ask Senator Powell to explain the bill to us, please. Good afternoon, sir.
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, for the record,
I understand it's lunchtime. Show that we do have a quorum. One of our quorum is having coffee over right now.
Okay.
There he goes. Okay. I wouldn't want it implied or inferred that I was conducting business in appropriate.
We don't need quorum stick testimony.
Well, after what we had for lunch and knowing that none of us have had time to brush our teeth, I'll make this very short.
We'll keep the doors open.
The bill before you, and for the record, I'm State Senator John Powell from District 19. The bill before you, Senate Bill 746, is simply a vehicle for these amendments that have been drafted. When I asked the staff to prepare this legislation, there was miscommunication on this and one other bill that's currently in your book. And the reason for introducing the bill, again, was to attempt to provide a vehicle for local taxing jurisdictions to increase voter participation. The amendments that I have proposed to this legislation are simply three lines. It says the governing body of a city, county, or district may mail sample ballots to all voters within the city, county, or district to assist the voters' preparation for voting. The original idea was to have an appropriation for a pilot program. That is still my idea, but I think it will need to await a future biennium prior to being funded. I would like to see a pilot program set up across the state in various districts so that the results in those districts that had sample ballots mailed could be compared and contrasted with all other districts in the state where such a mailing did not take place, to study the results in voter behavior. Also, at that time, to have some research done on voter opinion as to the effectiveness of knowing the question. Now, again, we're talking about local government elections where, in my opinion, even though we've limited the number of days, many people are unaware that a school district or a city or a special taxing district is actually having an election on one of those dates. This would, number one, tell them that there is an election coming up, and secondly, tell them exactly what the question before them would be, so that in a very inexpensive way, I think all of the citizens who are eligible to vote could know that an election is forthcoming and what is expected of them. I think knowing or understanding what that expectation is, they would be more inclined to find out or to have their questions answered prior to Election Day and thus increase voter participation. Again, I'm convinced one of the reasons people drive by the polls, even though they know they're open, is that they're not sure they know how to answer the questions, because they don't know what the questions are. This would simply let them know precisely what's going to be asked of them. I'm not proposing a voter's pamphlet as such, simply the questions that they're going to be asked on Election Day. So the effect of my amendment would simply make it possible. I think they already have the authority to do this in a roundabout way in the statute. This would simply make it direct. And either myself or my successor can propose the pilot program, hopefully in the next session when funds would be available to support one. But I think we have to face up to the fact that we are witnessing a very miserable level of voter participation, particularly in local government elections. When you consider a turnout of 10%, means 10% of those eligible to vote, not 10% of that community, but 10% of those who are registered to vote. So you're talking about a very slim minority of that community making decisions that, in effect, have very widespread repercussions, lead to tax revolts, and again, I'm convinced that one of the reasons people are dissatisfied with the property tax method of financing is they do not participate in the decision-making process. If you do not participate in it, you do not feel good about the services being delivered. So again, I think this program, this is simply the first step in what I see as a program that will face, let us face up to the question of sagging voter participation in the state and address it firsthand. I'd be glad to answer your questions.
Again,
have the amendments been passed out?
Yes, we have the copy.
So it would delete lines 12 through 16 and replace it with those three lines.
Are there questions? Senator Brown.
John, at the present time, can the governing body do that?
It is my understanding that yes, they can.
Okay, now this kind of points it out and it puts it into the statute books and
yes.
So that it's very clear that they can.
Yes.
And removes any doubt that
yes.
That maybe they can't.
And I talked with legislative counsel. It was their opinion that perhaps they can. The language in the statutes currently says that they may send a notice of election. It does not, in essence, promote the sending of the actual ballot question.
Could they send a letter, say, dear voter in school district number
yes,
seven?
Yes, they can and they have.
There's going to be an issue on the ballot on a week from now, and here's what it's going to look like when you go in to vote.
Yes.
And this is what it means. Or can they, are you, can
yes,
they only send just the ballot? The ballot language.
Pure facsimile.
Of the official ballot
sample.
Okay. No covering letter, no explanation.
Well, Ray Phelps is going to testify in a few minutes.
Again, that statute, the existing statute says they may send out a notification. This says they may send out a sample ballot to assist the voter. And again, it's in understanding the program, and the reason it's only three lines this time is the fact that I do not propose to attempt to get funding for the pilot program, or this bill would have been longer. My amendments would have set that pilot program up, and within 2 or 4 years, we would have had a good idea, in my judgment, whether direct notification to the voters through this method was going to substantially increase voter participation. I think you'll hear the people from the Secretary of State's office tell you that, in their opinion, it would increase voter participation, and I think it would as well.
Are there further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ray Phelps.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ray Phelps from Secretary of State's office. When I signed up for the bill, I was only partially aware of the amendments. With respect to Senator Brown's question, the sample ballot is a, if you will, a complete representation of the ballot that you actually see on the pages in the voter's device in your county, or on the paper ballot, or on the cards in Multnomah County. Facsimile is nothing more than what's printed in the newspaper, and it's an exact replica of the sample ballot, Senator, so that date of election, time of polling place, and a number of other pertinent items of information would be contained on the sample ballot. There would not have to be, if you will, a more lengthy explanation. Simply, it would be so informative that I don't think anybody would have a question. With respect to Senator Powell's comment regarding increasing voter participation, we've been looking at this mailing, and we have the same difficulty that the senator has, and it's the cost. There's no question it'll increase participation. When I was a county elections director, I used to mail the kind of information that Senator Powell is referring to in his bill, and I know it will increase participation. It's just that postage is expensive, but there's no question that I think that we're all working on the same wavelength on that respect of increasing participation. It's just it's going to be a rather costly mechanism. I think the results will be very beneficial and very rewarding, though.
Are there questions? Senator Brown.
If there's a school district election at the same time that's a countywide election, and the
yes.
county clerk or the county commissioners decide not to send out the full bed sheet for the full county to all of the county voters, can a subordinate jurisdiction like a school district mail just to their voters just that portion of the ballot that relates to their issues?
Well, of course, there's nothing in the statutes, in my view, that would prevent them from doing that at any time. In my mind, that's what's called informational, and overcomes a major objection a number of people have with respect to elections, and that is, we never know enough to make a decision. In Chapter 255, which is the statute dealing with special service districts, there is authorization right now that would allow for such a mailing in addition to or in lieu of the official publication in the newspaper. So that in some areas of the state presently, there is this kind of mailing going on because of the fact that the mailing is less expensive than the newspaper publication. So that right now, in very remote places, this is being done only as a matter of economics, not primarily as a matter of electoral notification.
But that's not a selective portion. That's the whole schmear.
Well, that would be correct. Well, that which you are qualified to vote, if it's being done by a particular district. Typically, however, if you recall last week when Mr. Robertson was here on a different measure, he pointed out the sample ballot, which in that case was not a thing to behold in respect to the measure being considered. But in effect, what he had there was the bedsheet ballot, the old bedsheet ballot that we've all maybe have voted on one time several years ago. So that's in effect a sample ballot, and that's typically what you would see. But begging that, I think a special district could do it right now today if they chose.
Their selective portion.
Yes, sir. I don't see any reason why they cannot. They're informing their electors, their constituents, and I don't see anything in the law to preclude them from doing that.
Are there further questions? Thank you very much, Ray. Okay, we'll close the hearing on 746 and move to Senate Bill 753 and ask Senator Roberts, its chief sponsor, to introduce the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Frank Roberts. The purpose of Senate Bill 753 and the whole change in this section having to do with the restriction of the political activities of public employees is on page 2 of the bill, which states, nothing in this section prohibits a public employee from promoting or opposing a measure while on the job during working hours when the employee is authorized to do so by a public employer pursuant to a statute of this state or an ordinance of a county, district, or city. The origin of this bill, as you'll see, it was introduced by several groups of people, all of them from basically from my county. It has incidence from a federal grant which a local community action group received and which was authorized by the county commissioners to receive this grant. This was a grant intended to provide advocacy for some programs of particular interest, in this case, I believe, to low-income people. The question, of course, was raised then as to whether or not the use of this grant for advocacy and its possible implications with reference to a measure on the ballot was actually contrary to state law, which prohibits an employee from supporting or opposing a measure. Somewhat similar to this, although this was not the direct occasion for this particular bill, was a case in which the health department of Multnomah County received a grant from the federal government for the purpose of educating the public with reference to the benefits of fluoridation. This grant came and was used shortly before a measure was on the ballot of the city of Portland having to do with repealing a fluoridation measure, fluoridation of the water supply measure, which had previously been approved. And so the question was raised, was not the activity of these county employees in using federal funds to educate the public as to the benefits of fluoridation, was not that in effect campaigning against a measure which was on the ballot in the city of Portland with reference to fluoridation? And so that the bill is intended to make it clear that if a specific action, provision of the statute, or a specific ordinance of a county, district, or city authorizes it, then employees would not be prohibited from promoting or opposing a measure while on the job. Now, I think that the committee recognizes the possible dangers of such a bill as this. I would presume that the safeguard in the bill, if one considers it an adequate safeguard, would be that a local government generally would be very hesitant to take a position of outright using public funds to support or to oppose a measure that was being voted upon by the people because of our generally accepted feeling that's inappropriate. And therefore, I think that where this bill would be helpful would be where a public body felt that a particular kind of activity really was not clearly or directly related to trying to propagandize the voter on a particular measure, that they would be hesitant to pass such an ordinance or action. On the other hand, I think that we recognized in many cases that we have not been critical of activities which are advocacy activities, even though they might appear to be influencing the public with reference to some measure. Originally I was requested to have this bill drawn to have it apply only to cases in which the source of the money was a grant from the federal government. Seems to me that that was just the fact that the federal government supplied the money should not be adequate authorization for allowing a public employee to try to influence a local measure. So that I kind of assume that it's most likely that this would occur in connection with some outside grant. But on the other hand, it is clear that the mere receiving of a grant would not provide the permission. It would actually, this activity would have to actually be approved by a specific statute or by an ordinance.
Other questions? Senator Brown.
Frank, on page one of the bill, in the current law, in the notice to the public on lines 22 and 23, I'm having some difficulty reading that. It says, is therefore the policy of the state and your public employer that you may engage in political activity. And then if I were writing that the way I think I read it, I would have put two dashes in there, except to the extent prohibited by state law, --, when on the job during working hours. Now, does that actually say that you, it's the policy of the state and your public employer that you may engage in political activity when on the job during working hours, except to the extent prohibited by state law? Is that the way, it sounds like basically this, what you are proposing already is a matter of state, already is a matter of law. It's badly written. There's no punctuation in there. No. What I'm saying is it seems that your amendment is already addressed by the current provision. At least this
is what I said. You may have some questions about the language, but I think the statement, when on the job during working hours, has to do with the extent to which it is prohibited by law when you are on the job. Outside of on the job, there is no prohibition.
And if there's no prohibition by state law, then I gather you can do it when on the job during working hours.
That's correct.
So currently, it's the policy of the state and the public employers
that you may engage in political activity when on the job during working hours, except to the extent prohibited.
Yes. And the extent to which you are prohibited is soliciting money, influence, or service, or thing of value, or otherwise aid or promote any political committee or aid or promote or oppose the nomination.
That's the current law.
Yes, that's the current law.
And does
you can do anything else.
Yes, and does your amendment on lines 1 through 3 permit some additional activity during working hours?
It does, and that's its intention. It says nothing in this section prohibits a public employee from promoting or opposing when this is done pursuant to a statute or ordinance. So in effect, it would allow a local government to specifically permit certain employees to do certain things which otherwise would be prohibited because they did consist of attempting to influence the outcome of a measure during working hours.
Could they solicit money or influence, or I'm not sure what they're doing that currently is permitted, is prohibited.
I presume that if under this statute, and I think this is why I told you that there are certain dangers in here. Right. I presume under this statute they could, by ordinance, specifically allow an employee to solicit political contributions for a particular purpose during working hours.
Okay.
My statement earlier was that this bill has dangers,
okay.
And you are, I would only be, I think, assuming that a local government would not have the
wisdom, discretion.
No, I was going to say they wouldn't have the nerve to authorize that kind of political activity. That was my assumption, and that's probably the guarantee involved in it. And if that's not good enough guarantee, then perhaps the bill has more dangers than one wants to entertain at this point.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Close the hearing on Senate Bill 753 and move to Senate Bill 727. And Senator Isham will
service
the bill.
723. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 723 is an idea that I'd like to explore with the committee. It would make a change in, I think, at least initially, a rather minor change in the delegate selection process for those delegates that would go to the National Convention and represent their political parties and presidential candidates at the National Convention. It would provide for a system for probably a small number, a limited number of delegates to go to the National Convention on an unbound basis. Under present law, as I understand it, and party rules, delegates are committed to a specific presidential candidate. If all states had Oregon's laws in combination with the weeding out process that the primaries tend to create, there would be little reason for conventions at all. And so I've attempted to try to address that in this bill. One thing I found in attending the Democratic National Convention that with Oregon's system of delegate selection, Oregon has relatively little influence in the convention process itself, since all of our delegates are locked into a position and are bound to vote that way, regardless of what the candidates may do or what any other state may do. And this would allow at least possibly a couple delegates to attend on an unbound basis. And the way this would be carried out is to provide a place on the ballot for no preference for president. Someone could vote, rather than vote for any of the candidates, could vote for no preference. And under the bill, delegates could be selected under no preference and combined with those presidential candidates who did not meet the minimum number of votes to have representation. A combination of those would be represented by someone at the convention that would be not bound. Now, under Oregon Democratic Party rules, that would mean those candidates who receive less than 15% of the popular vote. Under the Republican Party rules, I'm not as familiar as to how their delegates are selected, but those are our party functions. They are not really based in state law, but in the party. So during the last convention, we had the Carter delegates and the Kennedy delegates. Any other candidate received less than 15% of the popular vote, and therefore those people who voted for those other candidates were not represented at the convention at all. And what this system would allow is some representation on a no preference basis, plus those who didn't like any of the candidates could vote for no preference. So under the Democratic Party rules, and maybe somebody could testify as how this would affect the Republican Party, you would add the voters who voted no preference plus the voters who voted for a candidate that received less than 15% of the vote, they would be represented in their proper ratio of all delegates with a candidate who ran in the party process, the convention process in the state, on the basis of representing the uncommitted vote. This would allow Oregon more influence in the convention. There would be delegates that could run on their own name rather than being committed to a presidential candidate. It would allow voters an additional option, which they do not have now. And it also allows Oregon to respond to changing conditions or circumstances that come about either after the Oregon primary or at the convention itself. And that's the purpose of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? Okay. Appreciate that. We'll close the hearing on Senate Bill
723. Move that one right up?
No.
No, okay.
Do we have anyone else to testify?
No. We will open the hearing on Senate Bill 518, and we have quite a number of people signed up for that. We'll start with, first I have a question. Ray, is your discussion technical or to the bill?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Why don't we start with you then?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ray Phelps from the Secretary of State's office. The bill proposes to allow for the formation of for formation downward. In other words, if you're qualified on one level, then you can go up or down depending on any electoral district within the level of original formation. This particular measure, lines 16, 17, and 18, specifically on page 1 of the printed bill, contradicts paragraph B of subsection 1, lines 13, 14, and 15. That provision of the present law provides that there be a test of the electors with respect to that nomination for that particular office, whereby lines 16, 17, and 18 begin to open it up. In other words, you don't necessarily have to have a test for that office. Not only that, it appears that you're able to now link where you can pick up adjoining counties without, as I read the bill, without apparently having any test at all of the electors. For example, Marion County linking with Washington County. That's the way I see it anyway. I can't be convinced otherwise, but that's the way I see it. With respect to the free lists, that does have a fiscal impact, which I think the committee has. So I don't wish to get into that discussion beyond the point of just bringing it to the committee's attention. There's also, in the summary of the bill, provides for an electoral district for a period of 4 years. However, in reading the measure, I'm not sure where that... Oh, I'm sorry, it's on line 6. This, again, is a change in public policy, where the policy of the state has been that minor political parties shall continue to qualify once they form, and the qualification is attested to the ballot. I think that that is a good policy, and I think that this policy would foster the formation and the continuation of a number of minor political parties ranging in maybe attaining the level of quite a number to the degree that you'd have the problem in Michigan, where all of a sudden you had so many minor political parties you couldn't fit it on the voting equipment. The ballots became too long, and there was quite a story on that, I believe, at the previous election, where Michigan was stumped as to how to use their equipment for this kind of an election. So I think that the policy in the past is a good one. That is that a minor political party should stand the test each time there's a general election in the state of Oregon, not jump beyond an intermediate election. It would appear on the surface that this bill would be targeted toward a presidential type candidacy, not necessarily toward any lesser office candidacy, if you will, because obviously a four-year cycle is a presidential cycle. And let's be aware of one thing about a minor political party. Once a minor political party forms, a minor political party no longer has to petition, no longer has to participate in a primary, and no longer really has to participate in any part of the election process except a general election. Their candidates are nominated by their party rule. And literally, since there is no statute on this, our guidance is that that could be as few as two people. Simply stated, I and another person could nominate each other, and that's a minor political party. Nowhere else do you have